Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
Well, Wall Street seemed to like that inflation report. How about you? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott in for Kai Ryssdal. It's Tuesday, November 14th. Good to have you with us. The inflation news was pretty good today, or should I say disinflation news. Price increases slowed in October. The consumer price index was up 3.2% year over year compared to 3.7% in September. And core inflation minus volatile energy and food prices also slowed. That means not just some relief at the checkout, but also that the Fed may be done raising interest rates in its efforts to cool inflation. And while overall prices are still rising, just more slowly than before, some are actually falling. Airfares, for instance, which are about 13% lower than they were a year ago. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
Around this time last year, I did another story about inflation and airfare. Then it was way up, 43% higher than in the fall of 2021. Demand was really high, airlines were having trouble hiring enough staff and flying enough flights, and fuel prices were high. Now, a year later, fuel prices are down, and
airlines have added back to above 2019 seat capacity levels.
Haley Berg is lead economist at the travel app Hopper. She says demand has also been leveling out.
Last summer, there was an incredible amount of pent-up demand. Travelers were taking extra trips, willing to spend a lot more. This summer was a much more normal summer.
That's forcing airlines to compete more for customers again.
Most passengers are making up their minds about which airline to fly trip to trip. So airlines know that they have to use price to capture customers.
Henry Hardebelt is a travel industry analyst with Atmosphere Research Group.
This year, we are seeing some airlines being very aggressive with their cheapest fares, basic economy. Basic economy is a stripped-down fare. Basically, think of it as getting you the seat and the seatbelt and almost nothing else.
By offering those fares, he says, bigger airlines can compete effectively with budget airlines and then make some of that money back by charging those passengers for bringing a bag, picking their seat, or basically anything else. Mike Arnott at the airline analytics company Cirium says for passengers looking for a deal,
times are good right now, but they're not going to last at that low end of the market.
Partly because jet fuel prices are going up again, and so are labor costs. Unions for pilots and flight attendants have been negotiating new contracts, some with big pay increases.
So those cost pressures are going to hit the airlines.
And Arnott says that will eventually be passed down to customers. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, it's going to be the happy music. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. A lot of the stuff we buy that shows up in the CPI comes through the Port of Laredo in Texas. This year, it beat out other hubs in Los Angeles and Chicago for top U.S. port by trade value. But unlike those sprawling urban areas with major overpasses and eight-lane highways, Laredo, with less than 300,000 people, has more of a small-town feel. Now that Congress has approved billions in federal funding to boost U.S. infrastructure and strengthen North American supply chains, Laredo is lined up to get its share. Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval has this postcard from the U.S.-Mexico border.
semi-trucks coming from Mexico are lined up bumper to bumper across 8 lanes as far as the eye can see over the Rio Grande River. The smell of diesel stings the nose. Alberto Flores runs the Port of Laredo for U.S. Customs and Border Protection.
We're right smack in the middle of peak, you know, crossing for both northbound and southbound.
We're at the World Trade Bridge, one of two commercial bridges in Laredo where 10,000 northbound trucks pass through a day, a number expected to grow as trade between the U.S. and Mexico increases.
You see the bridge is completely packed.
How many trucks would you say that is?
It's hard to say, a couple hundred for sure.
At this roaring heart of North American trade, goods like avocados and John Deere tractors are pumped through interstate highways to every state in the continental U.S. Roughly 40% of cargo is cars and car parts.
You know, wire harnesses, windshield, airbags, tires, complete vehicles, assembled vehicles.
Here, Flores shows me one recent infrastructure improvement in Laredo. 4 new lanes from Nuevo Laredo to Laredo with expedited processing for approved commercial drivers.
You can see it takes on average between 30 to 45 seconds per truck to get processed. So they're moving a lot faster. Again, because they don't have to queue into the rest of the cargo.
From here, goods from Mexico hit major trucking arteries of the United States, including I-35. Mile 1 starts in Laredo.
So we are basically here. This is the intersection of FM 1472 and Highway 255. So this is what leads us to Columbia Bridge.
Jerry Maldonado is with Warren Transport, a trucking company that moves a lot of farm equipment from Mexico to the Midwest.
We're going to make a left here. And these are physically trucks coming right here. The ones driving up are coming out of Mexico.
On our way to Laredo's other bridge for commercial vehicles, Columbia Bridge, we use Mines Road, which cuts through open ranch land and massive industrial parks and often gets congested with dozens of 18-wheelers going from the bridge to a trucking terminal, like the one Maldonado runs. At his office, he tells me how even tiny improvements can go far.
It sounds a little weird when they added one lane. How much difference could it make? It probably cut the time by more than 50% of crossing that intersection.
Improving the port, local roads, the interstate, it's a constant topic of conversation among Laredo's business community, where trade and transportation make up a third of local jobs. A.J. Krause develops land for industrial parks in Laredo.
You always need a new road. You always need upgrades to roads, traffic lights, rail infrastructure.
Although bets on Laredo infrastructure haven't always immediately panned out, the Columbia Bridge north of town was once a subject of a research paper called Understanding How to Avoid Building Bridges to Nowhere. For years, it was underused in part due to poor planning with Mexico. But that's changing. This is Flores from Customs and Border Protection again.
We are already pushing, like I said, between 26 and 2,800 trucks at Columbia, and with those numbers, I can only say we're at about 65 to 70% capacity at Columbia.
He says when a new Mexican highway opens in the next few months, it will more directly connect the Columbia Bridge with the Mexican industrial city of Monterrey.
Once that roadway opens, I believe that Columbia is going to explode.
A number of industries could benefit. One of them, EVs.
You got Monterrey, where they're building a multi-billion dollar manufacturing plant for Tesla. It's a straight shot. You got Monterey, Columbia, you have 255, which takes you directly to 35, and then you're off to Austin.
Whether headed to a 10 million square foot manufacturing floor in Austin or a distribution facility in Atlanta, it's infrastructure investment that allows the products coming through Laredo to get where they need to be quickly and safely. I'm Elizabeth Troval for Marketplace.
One thing the Consumer Price Index doesn't measure is gambling losses. I tell you that because ESPN and its partner Penn Entertainment launched a new sports betting platform today in 17 states. It's called ESPN Bet. The company's hoping it can grab a piece of the nearly $85 billion global sports betting market. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks at how ESPN might fit in a crowded field.
It's been 5 years since sports betting became legal, and most states now allow it. Jordan Bender, an analyst at JMP Securities, says in that short time, just two companies, DraftKings and FanDuel, have gobbled up about 80% of the market.
Those are the companies that have the time advantage. They're the ones that have been able to grow their businesses a lot better.
It's hard for new platforms to enter the market because users generally stick to one, maybe two sports betting apps. ESPN is hoping it can steal them away with Status.
Does that entice you? It's a little difficult to say.
Because sports betting is less about brand recognition and more about how well the platform works. When the Caesars Sportsbook app launched last year, users got up to a $3,000 deposit match. Bernie McTernan, an analyst at Needham & Company, says that helped the app scoop up 40% of the market, only to drop into the single digits after people burned through the incentives.
I think it's easy to give people money and have them gamble on your platform. The harder thing is retaining them for years.
McTernan says new betting platforms have to offer something special. For ESPN Bets, that's its media content on ESPN.
You know, you're checking your fantasy team for fantasy football, and you can easily make bets about your players.
Or you're in the app watching a clip of your favorite commentator previewing a game, and you can easily bet on it. McTernan says a seamless user experience could be a win. But Andrew Zimbalist, a sports economist at Smith College, says this could backfire for ESPN, especially if gambling starts to drive its content, because sports loyalists and sports bettors watch and read differently.
So if that role of sports switches to here's an opportunity to lose money betting and drive yourself crazy, then yes, I think it can have a deleterious effect on the company's finances.
Especially, he says, because online sports gambling is a relatively unknown industry. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up, a check-in with one travel business.
It has been good. I did not know that I'd be saying that in 2020.
Yeah, did any of us? But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 489 points, 1.4% to finish at 34,827. The NASDAQ added 326 points, almost 2.4% to close at 14,094. And the S&P 500 picked up 84 points, 1.9% to end at 44.95. That optimistic CPI report gave a big boost to bank stocks. Bank of America pocketed 5.5%. Wells Fargo rang up 3.2%. Citigroup picked up 3.9%. It also helped push the dollar down. The U.S. dollar index gave up 1.5%. Amid a slowdown in home improvement spending, analysts had been expecting Home Depot to report that same-store sales had fallen about 3.3% when it released its quarterly earnings today. Instead, they fell just 3.1%, which helped the retailer's shares pick up 5.4%. Rival Lowe's, which reports a week from today, added 4.3%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.45%. You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. The CPI wasn't the only inflation report out today. The federal government also released its fifth national climate assessment, a huge multi-agency report that lays out the risks and costs of human-caused climate change. Stick with me, because those costs are significant. The report finds that climate change will impact household budgets by raising medical expenses, food prices, and insurance premiums, and the cost of repairing and replacing homes damaged by more frequent disasters. And as Marketplace's Henry Epp reports, that could be a recipe for long-term inflation.
Climate change is going to cost us, says Kenneth Gillingham, a professor of environment and energy economics at Yale. It's going to create what he calls an upward force on prices in many sectors. Some of those will affect us long term, but we're already feeling them right now. Take, for example, air pollution and hotter temperatures.
You're more likely to have, say, ground level ozone, which would lead to asthma cases and hospital admissions.
That could inflate healthcare costs, he says, but one way to mitigate this is building homes to keep out things like wildfire smoke. Ace McCarlton is doing this in Vermont, where he leads a sustainable building company called New Frameworks.
An airtight building where you have controlled ventilation that is filtered can really be a big difference for people's health.
But that approach comes with costs, too. McCarlton uses natural materials like wood fiber to insulate homes he builds, which, compared to foam insulation, is
a little bit more expensive, but getting more and more competitive every day.
At this point, adapting to climate change has unavoidable costs, says Gernot Wagner, a climate economist at Columbia Business School.
And that leads to climateflation. That leads to price increase.
But Wagner, like many, feels we're not doing nearly enough to address climate change itself.
Which by extension means, yes, there is plenty more hurt, plenty more costs built in, unless we do much, much more.
In Vermont, Ace McCarlton's customers seem to sense this. The homebuilder says he used to hear from people who were worried about the high costs of green building. Not anymore.
It actually tells me that something profound has shifted, where we're not actually in the world anymore of saying, oh, green building is a premium that you just can't afford.
Now, he says, we can't afford to go without it, even if it means spending more now to save later. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
We've got a whole podcast about solutions to the climate crisis. It's called How We Survive. A new season is out now. If we're going to avoid even worse effects of climate change, we have to rethink how we get around, which is why a recent report from Streetlight Data caught our attention. The transportation analytics company found that since the pandemic, Americans are walking a lot less. Between 2019 and 2022, average daily walking trips nationwide fell by 36%. People are biking more, but every one of the largest 100 cities saw a decline of at least 20% in walking trips. Linda Poon, a staff writer at Bloomberg City Lab, wrote about what's behind the data. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Why are we walking so much less?
Well, there's a lot of explanation, and it differs from place to place, but some of the trending ones that urban experts have come up with is that the roads have become generally more dangerous, right? Cars are driving faster, they're drivers are driving more recklessly and enforcement has been down. So there's less of an incentive to walk. There's also theories regarding the rise of online deliveries, right? Everyone's just using Amazon and getting their packages delivered. So there's less reason to go outside your house. But those are sort of the general trends.
I want to come back to the safety issue in a bit, but it strikes me that this decline is happening at the same time that it seems like there's increased awareness about the benefits of walking. And, you know, there are all those people out there counting their steps, wearing their fitness watches, not to mention all the dogs people adopted during the pandemic. Somebody's got to be walking them. Were you surprised by this decline?
Yeah, especially with the dog part. I know I've gotten a dog and I've walked so much more than I have in the past. But I think it sort of comes to the difference between walking as a commuting choice versus recreational. Maybe there are more people who are walking recreationally, but because there is less of that commuting walking aspect, that may have put a dent. And also, maybe less surprising is that U.S. has generally not had a great walking track record compared to other countries. Cities here are generally built around cars, and so there's less incentive to choose walking as your main mode of transportation over cars.
Yeah, and a really frightening statistic on that safety issue, 7,500 pedestrians were killed in traffic accidents last year. That's at the same time that people are walking less. How do experts explain this rise in traffic fatalities?
Right. So the problem isn't so much that there are less pedestrians on the road, but the fact that drivers are driving a little bit faster, a bit more recklessly. And part of that motivation is that because the pandemic sort of kept people at home, so the roadways were a bit emptier, there were less congestion. That kind of gave people a little bit more motivation to, you know, drive faster.
And you also point out cars have gotten heavier. You see all those huge trucks with the big front end that is more deadly, frankly.
Yeah, so one of the main thing is that they're kind of riding higher off the ground. So when cars do hit pedestrians, they're hitting them along the torso rather than the legs. I recently went car shopping and it was so hard to find a car that wasn't like really, really big. That it's just been sort of a trend that SUVs, pickup trucks are becoming sort of favorites among drivers.
So there's the, you know, obvious potential health benefits to consider. Walking is good for you. But should we care that people are walking so much less generally? Why does this matter?
Yeah, I mean, public health is a very strong reason already. You know, if we're thinking about the future of climate crisis, right, we're trying to get people out of cars.
Yeah.
And we're not making walking a realistic choice of transit that certainly sort of dents that progress to get cars off the road and lower carbon emissions.
Linda Poon is a staff writer at Bloomberg City Lab. Thanks so much for your reporting.
Thank you for having me.
Sam Fields talked about airline prices earlier. Holiday travel season is upon us, and it's expected to be a busy one. The TSA is predicting record traffic at U.S. airports over the Thanksgiving travel period. And this year has seen a rebound in international trips. We checked in with Sarah Fazenden, founder of Videre Travel in Denver, Colorado, and asked how things have been since we last spoke last year.
It's been good. It has been good. I did not know that I'd be saying that in 2020, but it's good. We're good. Things are back. It's been busy. We've doubled the team. We've doubled the size and we have doubled our sales. It's been just a year of phenomenal growth. So the type of travel I think that we contributed to the growth that we've experienced over the last year is just bigger trips. I think people are realizing that if they want to do something like a safari or the Galapagos or some of these trips that are higher dollar value, they take a little bit longer. Oftentimes we have people coming to us and say, what do I need to budget, right? We want to go in 3 years or 4 years. And that's great. And it, you know, it seems like it's really far away, but particularly for families that have kids that might be leaving the house or going to college, they kind of want to make these things happen before that. Generally speaking, people are planning farther in advance. They are budgeting for these big bucket list trips and really placing value and importance on that.
That's Sarah Fazenden, founder of Videre Travel in Denver. This final note on the way out today, a coda to that story about people walking less. One way to make the streets safer for pedestrians, according to the mayor of Paris, is to get large SUVs off the road. The French city's mayor, Anne Hidalgo, announced today she'll ask voters to decide whether to impose a very significant increase in parking fees for SUVs visiting Paris. It wouldn't apply to locals. Earlier this year, Paris residents voted to ban shared e-scooters from the city over safety concerns. Hidalgo said she wants automakers to stop pushing, quote, ever bigger, more expensive, more resource guzzling, more polluting vehicles. SUVs made up almost half of new vehicle sales in the European Union last year. And here's your moment of economic context. One last item from that inflation report, which I probably don't have to tell you if you've eaten out lately. Restaurant prices are way up, more than 6% from a year ago at fast food and fast casual joints. Meanwhile, groceries only up 2.1%. Guess I'm cooking tonight. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on-demand. And I'm Amy Scott. We'll be back tomorrow. This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.